Welcome to another edition of Garden Talk. Hi, I'm Larry Mueller. My guest today, Lisa Johnson, Dane County UW Extension Horticulture Educator. Happy to have her along and really glad to have you listening in. And if you have a question about plants, be it the indoor kind or the outdoor kind, we certainly hope you'll join in. The number to call is 1-800-642-1234. Or in the Madison area, you can reach us at 263-1890. Lisa, welcome back.
Well, thanks, Larry.
Nice to have you with us. And you and I were talking before the show, not a bad time of the year to be out there looking for gypsy moth egg masses.
Yep, you got that right. This is a great time of year to do that, first of all, because you can see them without the leaves being in the way, and second of all, this is a great time of year to treat them. You can usually find the gypsy moth egg masses, particularly on oak trees, on the bottom portion of the limbs. They'll look kind of a peachy golden color if you have them. It's a good idea to bring your binoculars with you because sometimes that first limb is 20 feet off the ground, so it's kind of hard to see.
So, and there are treatments for it.
Yes, there are. In fact, there are ones that homeowners can use. There's a product called Golden Pest Spray Oil, and you can get that at a number of local garden centers. And it's an oil product that basically suffocates those little eggs in their egg mass. And it's very low toxicity. It's mostly made out of soybean oil. You don't want to use just plain soybean oil, though, because that's pretty heavy for the, it can actually damage the tree.
Okay. All right. So take a look. You've got some oak trees in particular. Well, any it could be on any trees, though.
It could be. It's just that oaks are some of their favorites. And here in the Madison, Middleton, Sun Prairie area, we've had our share of gypsy moth woes and probably will in the spring again.
Molly in Madison has a question or comment. Molly, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I'm a condo owner, and I live kind of on the border of Madison and Middleton, and I love gardening. And I was just wondering, I don't have, like, space to do it, and I've heard, like, rumors about community gardens kind of in our area, and I was wondering if you knew anything about specific gardens where I could go and try and get a plot for this coming year.
Okay, well, the organization that pretty much manages the community garden scene in the Madison-Middleton area is the Community Action Coalition. And you can find them in the phone book. Janet Parker is one of the people you could talk to, or Ben Summers. They would have a really good idea of where the closest gardens are to you. And if it turns out that there isn't anything close to you, they may be able to help you start a community garden. There's also a really great website called the Feeds website. That's F-E-E-D-S. And I think it's feeds.org. Try Googling that. And that's an extension website that has community gardens from all over the state. And we're, what the goal is to try and bring all those community gardens together so that they can do virtual tours, they can have people chat with each other and talk about problems, solutions, cool new plants, etc.
Okay, well, thank you very much.
All right.
Have a great day.
Yeah, you too. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it, Molly. And let's go to Don in Fort Atkinson next. Don, hi.
Good morning. How are you today?
Great.
Thanks for taking my call. First of all, I have a huge garden. It's about almost a quarter of an acre, so I raise everything.
Cool.
But I was going to get on the last time you had a guest on there, but I was cut off because he ran out of time. And here's my situation. I like to have squash and pumpkins to plant the pumpkins for the grandkids. The squash we freeze for winter use. And over the years, I have planted squash, and it gets the stem borer, which is a fairly common thing, and it gets into my pumpkins also. So I avoid doing it. I change varieties of squash, and that seemed to help last year. But here's my question. Someone told me that if I take radish seeds, scatter it amongst the pumpkin plants when they first come up, because I raise them from seed, and let them go to seed, it will avoid that. Now, is this an old wives' tale, or does that, have you ever heard of anything like this?
I haven't heard that one.
I haven't heard that one either. One thing you can do to help try and cut down on those populations of squash vine borer is to make sure that you really clean up the garden well, because they do overwinter in the soil and in that old material. So you do need to make sure that you do some fairly good garden cleanup. The other thing that you can do that I have heard of, and Phil Pelletieri has talked about this, is that there are some nematodes available that you can actually inject into the stem if you start to have wilting symptoms, and that they can take out those larvae actually in the stem. That, see, that's part of the problem, is that, you know, you spray and it doesn't take care of the larva because it's protected with inside the plant.
See, I've gone so far as to cover them with a cover cloth. I've sprayed the stems from the outside at various stages and so forth, and they become so lush, and then all of a sudden they start to wilt at the end, and I know they're in there, and I've opened them. Being a former teacher, I'm interested in that. I open them, and those grubs in there are as big as your little finger.
Yeah. Ugh. Yuck.
Yeah. could I shoot one more quick question?
Sure.
Sure.
Okay.
I just wanted to tell you also, the time that the eggs are laid is about the time that chicory starts to bloom.
I got it. Okay.
Also, that's about the 1st of July, because that's also when the Japanese beetles start to come out.
Okay.
So there are little brown eggs at the base of the plant, and if you can find those and squish them, you'll also have less squash vine borer.
Okay, that sounds good. Now, my next question. I have access to mushroom medium. In other words, what they use, horse manure for growing mushrooms.
Mm-hmm.
And I can get it by the trailer load.
Oh,
and
wow.
My wife uses it on her perennials. She has a huge perennial garden,
mm-hmm.
and it makes it easy to pick the weeds and so forth. And I'm wondering how much nutritional value there would be in this mushroom compost, because I don't want to use preen where I don't have to, and I don't want to use a chemical if I don't have to.
Mm-hmm. How much? Okay, you kind of are talking about two different things here. Preen is a pre-emergent.
Right. You're right. And what I'm saying is my mushroom compost is seed-free in most cases.
Okay.
And so for me to, if I can use that on my garden and it has any nutritional value, I mean, I'll get it by the ton and put on.
Well, okay. Organic amendments like compost, like manure, composted manure. We don't want to use fresh manure way, shape, or form. But in general, compared to the synthetic fertilizers, they have a lot less nutritional content.
Okay.
However, they do great things for the soil. They really help with the soil structure. They make the fertility of your soil much better in a physical fashion as opposed to necessarily a chemical fashion.
Right. Okay.
So it's great. I would say, go ahead and use it.
Yeah, absolutely.
It may not have a whole lot of nutritional content, but it's going to do great stuff for your structure.
I got it. I appreciate this.
All right.
Thank you so much.
Yep. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate
it, Don.
You can join in, too, as we visit with Lisa Johnson, Dade County UW Extension Horticulture Educator. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, in Madison at 263-1890. Give us a call. We'll get you on pretty quickly. Lisa, you're going to be doing a little fencing this weekend, understand?
Yeah, I looked out in my backyard this morning and noted that my witch hazel is getting eaten by those little furry
rabbits.
Yeah, I noticed the little pellets, and I noticed that my witch hazel is a lot shorter than it should be. And so I thought, oh my gosh, I better get out there with the hardware cloth and fence what's left of the poor thing. You can certainly do that. You know, since we're going to have much warmer temperatures, now we'll be able to not only find the plants to fence them, but actually get to them.
Yeah, actually be a lot easier. Well, let's take some more calls. Again, you can join us at 1-800-642-1234. Wendy in Green Bay, your turn. Hi, Wendy. Thanks for calling.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I wasn't planning on calling, so I don't have the name of this plant, but I'm going to tell you a little bit of the features. It's a tall plant that's been trimmed as a topiary, and I have them flanking my front path, and they're beautiful, except one of them is dying. I think it's kind of getting the gray tinge. It's not really dropping a lot of leaves or turning brown, but it's definitely turned a different color.
So this is
a pear.
This is not a conifer, then. This is a broadleaf that drops. It's deciduous.
No, it's an evergreen. It's an evergreen. It doesn't have any cones. It's not. I can't remember the name. It's not like a cypress or what is a common cedar. It's like
boxwood?
It's not a boxwood.
Okay.
It's and it is native to zone four, which I'm in. I believe I'm in zone four.
Mm-hmm. Green Bay.
And it's crazy to even call you, but it's like one of them's doing really well, and the other one, which is just right across the sidewalk, is dying. So,
it has green leaves that it holds on to over the winter.
Green needles.
Needles.
It does have
needles.
Okay, so it is a conifer. Okay. Gosh.
I don't know if I've tried to put a lot of water on it, and I mulched it and put, burlap around it, and it's got pack the snow around it so it's going to be insulated from the cold. But is there anything you can recommend as the spring comes on that I can do to this plant to try to, it hasn't turned totally brown yet, but definitely I can see changes in the coloring of the pine needles turning a little bit gray, looking different from the other healthier green one. And they're so expensive, I'm freaked out, because these topiary, huge, it's like 7 feet tall. They cost like $150 a pop.
Yeah. Yikes. in the future, if your plant survives, you might want to try wrapping some burlap around it to prevent that. It sounds like either winter burn or it could even be some kind of root rot organism there, from both ends of the spectrum. Usually I find that with evergreens, it's going to be a water problem, but there are certainly many pathogens. What I would do in the spring is if it still isn't looking good, be sure to start watering it, by the way, in about April, if we don't get a good, moist spring. Is you can send a sample to Brian Huddleston at the Plant Disease Diagnostics Clinic.
In Madison.
Yeah, in Madison, and see if there is, in fact, a disease problem.
And when I send a sample of the soil or a sample of the actual...
A sample of the plant. Don't just send him a twig that doesn't have any needles on it anymore, though. He needs to have some of the green and some of the brown. And their website is www.plantpath, that's all one word, plantpath.wisc.edu/PDDC for Plant Disease Diagnostics Clinic. Or you can give them a call at 608-262-2863.
Okay, thank you very much for your help.
Mm-hmm.
All right, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. Carlene in Brooklyn, you are next. Hi, Carlene.
Hi. I actually have three questions.
Okay.
I thought I was going to be more energetic this fall than I was, and the weather was so nice for so long, I was fooled into thinking I would be able to plant some things. And so I ordered from a catalog the end-of-the-season things that they had, and I didn't get them in the ground. So now I have some pretty geraniums, astilbes, and daylily bulbs.
The roots, sort of?
Well, they're in compost, I suppose this is what they're in. I'm actually holding it in my hand looking at it.
So they're bare root?
They're bare root.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm wondering what the likelihood is that the money that I spent this fall is still going to be good for these in the spring.
Okay. When did you receive them?
I got them just before it turned cold, so early November.
Okay. And have you put any water on them or anything?
No, I've just left them packaged.
Okay. Are they moist at all?
Yeah, a little.
Okay. In that kind of condition, it's when you receive plants like that, it's best to, if you can't get them in the ground right away, to at least make sure that they're moist.
Mm-hmm.
You could, if they are still alive, and I'm not promising that they you could plant them up in houseplant pots and put them in a sunny window and keep them until spring and then plant them outside. There wouldn't be any problem with that if they're still alive.
Okay.
That's probably the best approach now.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And
yeah.
If, you can tell if they're mushy.
Anything
or
green appears,
yeah.
I'll know.
Yeah, right.
Right. Then I also bought some large packages of, flower seeds, assortments, perennials, wildflowers. My question about them, I knew I was going to plant them in the spring, but do I need to put them in the freezer or anything I know that some perennials need to that cold shock.
Right.
And so my question is the garage and it's 20 degrees cold enough, or do I need to have them get colder than that?
Okay. First of all, you need to know what plant you're working with.
It's just a mix. I mean, these are impulse buys at the end of the season.
Right.
And
okay.
Well, look at the package, and the package should tell you if you need to store them under special conditions like that. If not, just keep them someplace cooler, like your basement, but not cold or freezing, and you should be able to go ahead and plant them.
And then my last question is the one I'm most interested in. My daughter and her girlfriend are getting married in my backyard next summer, on July 5th. And I have my vegetable garden is next to where they have chosen for their spot. And so I've agreed not to have a vegetable garden there this year, but I also don't want to grow grass on it. So I'm thinking of some kind of annual flower that will be tall and showy, maybe a mix of things by July 5th.
Okay, well, you want to make sure that you're going to get your annuals early in the season then. I would suggest maybe something like Cosmos.
Mm-hmm.
Salvia, the taller
mm-hmm.
salvias.
Yeah.
I don't know what the colors are of the wedding or
well,
if it...
green, so it won't... I don't even
oh,
go
okay.
With
okay. Snapdragons are usually looking just fine by that time of year. Might be a little early for zinnias. Celosia, some taller celosia.
How do you spell that?
Oh, C-E-L-O-S-I-A.
Oh, okay.
I'm sure there's a bunch that I'm forgetting here at the last minute, but
you got four nice ones there, though.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Nice color variety there.
Yeah,
sure. And if they're, you might want to put in some foliar plants like the coleus. They have some beautiful colors of coleus now,
okay.
And those will look fine all year. So
yeah.
Great.
They, you know, pinks and mm-hmm. greens and mm-hmm. yellows and oranges and
excellent.
All right.
Well, thank you so much.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. And Deb in Madison, we turn to you next. Hi, Deb.
Hi. My question is, I didn't trim my bushes, my rose bushes in the fall, and normally I do it, and we're moving like in February. Is it possible to still trim those in the wintertime, or will that kill them?
No, you can trim them, but I guess I'm just wondering why. I usually wait until spring because you don't know how much of the plant is going to die back, you know, what Mother uh-huh. Nature's going to throw at us. So I usually wait until spring to see what is what's left before I trim them down real far. Now, if there are some real tall stems that you just wanted to take down for aesthetic reasons, that's fine. Mm-hmm. That shouldn't be a problem. But I wouldn't trim them down too far.
Oh, okay. My husband said they look a mess, and if we're going to try selling our house, he said, why does that have
okay.
to go?
So it's aesthetics that we're concerned
yeah.
about here. I'd say, you know, you could probably take them down to, how tall are they?
They're probably about 4 feet.
4 feet. Okay. You could take them down to 2 feet and kind of cut them off all at the same height so that they look regular at least.
Would you need to have to cover them then?
Well, the bases of the plant should have been covered back in November, probably.
Well, I've never covered them, so.
You know, depending on the variety, they may be just fine.
Okay.
The shrub roses usually do well without the bases being covered. It's the hybrid teas and floribundas that typically are a problem. And then you have some like knockout rose that typically will die back to the ground anyway.
Okay.
So, not knowing.
I think that's what they are, is knockout.
I'm sorry?
I think that's what they are, is a knockout.
Is a knockout? Oh, wow. Okay. You're doing good to have them 4 feet tall. That's impressive.
and every year I trim them right down to the bottom. But like I said, usually I do it already. Usually do it in the fall.
That's probably okay with knockout because it does tend to die back to the base. But I do like to leave some stem. First of all, it gives them something to, you know, kind of gives them a jump start.
Okay.
And with the plants that are grafted, you do want to definitely leave some material.
Sure.
Great. Okay. Thanks a lot.
Yeah. Thanks, Deb, for calling. Appreciate it. And on to Karen in Oregon. Hi, Karen.
Hi. Hi. I'm calling to ask questions about using horse manure in a vegetable garden.
Okay.
And I have access to it because I work at a local stable, and mm-hmm. one worker there says she says that the shavings, some of the manure is just the manure, and some is mixed with shavings. And I'm wondering if it's okay to use the wood shavings too in the garden. My coworker says that sometimes can raise the pH or something.
Tie up the nitrogen.
Yeah, that would be more of what I'd... there's also something called a carbon-nitrogen ratio, where if you use a lot of wood product, especially fresh wood product that's not been composted, that sometimes you can, as Larry was saying, tie up the nitrogen in the soil. Well, I would think that if you compost, I mean, you certainly don't want to use fresh horse manure. You want to compost it for about a season. Mm-hmm. And you should be able to use that without a problem. We do have a new publication out on Extension about using manures in the garden or the vegetable garden that you might want to take a look at as well. But horse manure is great stuff if you can work it into the ground at the beginning of the season, or some people top dress with it.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so it's best to put it in the springtime then?
You can put it on in the fall too. Mm-hmm. Either way is fine, but just make sure that it's composted.
So I could use either one then, either just the regular horse manure itself or with the shaving?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, make sure it's well mixed though.
And composted.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then does that introduce a lot of weed seed or is that...
Oh, well, yes, it can.
Uh-huh.
The horse isn't too fussy about making sure that it doesn't eat the seeds along with the plants. So, you can have some problems with that.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much. Mm-hmm.
Thanks a lot for calling. Composting would help that, though, wouldn't it?
Yeah, it certainly would, particularly if it's, you know, turned and mm-hmm. watered and treated properly instead of just mounded up and left there.
Yep. All right. Great. Gary in Fond du Lac, your turn now. Hi, Gary.
Good morning and Happy New Year.
To you as well.
I'm calling. I live on Holly Tree Lane. So two growing seasons ago, I decided to pull out some ugly old evergreen bushes and plant holly.
Ah.
I planted two female and one male. Put the male in the middle.
What kind of holly did you plant?
I don't remember.
Is it an evergreen type, or is it our native?
They're green.
Okay.
The first growing season, they didn't grow much. I think they rooted. But this last growing season, after the first growing season, the winter time, I did have to cut one of them back a little bit. Probably had to take about 6 inches off. And that one grew to maybe 15 inches.
Mm-hmm.
But the information that I got when I bought them said that these would grow to somewhere in the neighborhood of 4 foot. But I tested the soil before and got it in line with the pH.
Uh-huh.
But this last year, I got some flowers on one of the bushes. I got no berries. And then they didn't grow beyond like 15 inches. And I'm wondering what's what.
Sure.
Okay. Now, remind me again, what city are you in?
Fond du Lac.
Fond du Lac. Okay. So you're up there.
There, yeah. Well, not too far.
are you in zone 5 or zone 4? Do you know?
I'm sorry.
Do you
I'm
know
sorry,
if you're in zone 5 or zone 4?
I think we're kind of on the fringe of both.
Hmm.
I think when I bought them, they said we were like the north end of 4 and the south end of 5.
Okay. All right. The problem with hollies is that they're not real winter hardy in Wisconsin, and it's difficult to get them to grow quickly to any size if they're not in a protected area. So if you've got them out in, they do like some sun, but they also like some shade. And they like to be protected from drying winter winds. They don't like to get particularly dry during the summer. So they are, first of all, not a very fast-growing plant. And second of all, they're not very fast-growing in our area or in Wisconsin. I have seen some very nice ones, like down in the Janesville area, that were on a protected side of the house, and they put burlap over them in the winter and, you know, made sure that when there was a drought during the year that they kept them watered and fertilized and so on. But they're not, you can't just plunk them in the ground like a potentilla and, you know, and yeah, they'll just take off. Yeah, so it doesn't...
My potentilla, I cut right down to the ground and they come back like gangbusters.
Right, right. They're, mm-hmm. they're a lot easier plant to take care of, although the merits of it are debatable.
Should I worry about whether I get berries or not?
I wouldn't worry about that yet. Remember, as you said, you do have to have both the male and the female, and if both of them aren't blooming, you're not going to have any berries. So you've just had them for 2 years. Usually it takes about 3 seasons for a plant to get really well established. And
I water them quite a bit, you know, during the summertime.
Mm-hmm. Good. About an inch a week or so.
Yeah, they're not protected now, and that's something I was worried about. They're covered with snow. So
yeah, that's good.
That will help the winds. But,
right. Yeah,
okay.
And in years where we have good snow cover, you're golden. But years where we don't, the burlap probably would help. And yeah. I suspect when you said you had to cut it back by half, that was probably winter kill.
Injury. Well, I'm hoping in the relatively near future I can invite all my neighbors to. Observe the only holly which is on Holly Tree Lane. So,
all right.
Good luck with that.
Thanks a lot for calling. Lisa Johnson, Dane County UW Extension Horticulture Agent, our guest today. I'm Larry Mueller. Jim Packard, our producer on the Ideas Network. Talking all things gardening now with Lisa Johnson, Dane County UW Extension Horticulture Educator, Larry Mueller here. Thanks for listening in. Give us a call if you have a question at 1-800-642-1234 in Madison at 263-1890. Let's turn to Patricia in Madison. Hi, Patricia.
Good morning.
Morning.
I have a question and then a comment. I'm in the same predicament as that other woman who didn't get everything planted in the fall, and I have a dozen tulip bulbs. Wondering what to do with them, if I can do anything with them in the spring.
Okay. Oh, yes, you can. All right. I guess for now I would pot them up and water them, get the roots going and so on. And if you have an area where they can slowly get cold acclimatized, you know, so that you can get them down to freezing and then below so that they, you know, go dormant. You don't want them to actually start producing leaves or anything, but you do need to have some roots. And so you might want to leave them inside the house for, like, I don't know, a week or two, mm-hmm. maybe, and make sure that they're deep enough in a big enough pot that when the soil freezes that they'll be okay. And then store them someplace. If you have really deep snow, you could even bury them in a snowbank. Mm-hmm. If the snow deigns to stick around long enough, mm-hmm. you could do something like that or put them in an unheated garage.
Okay, and my comment is, previously you had mentioned to one of the callers about planting different flowers for her garden wedding, and mm-hmm. this past year I learned that cosmos seeds should not be planted in fertilized soil, hmm. because I had plants that were, 4 or 5 feet tall, very tall, lush greenery, but they did not bloom
flower.
Until, like, September.
Yeah. The cosmos plants come from Mexico, and they actually like to grow in soil that's fairly poor. They're not really adjusted to grow really well in very high-fertility soil. Now, if you start with plugs, you're a little better off, but still I wouldn't put them in a real high fertility area. That's a really good point. I'm glad you brought that up.
Thank you. Yeah, thanks, Patricia. Appreciate it. Good points there. Kevin in Deerfield, your turn. Hi, Kevin.
Hi. I'm in eastern Dane County, and I have a several hundred feet of driveway that I have a snow drifting problem with, and I was thinking about planting something along there that might act as a natural snow fence,
mm-hmm.
thinking about, Norway spruce or white pine or something, but then I thought, well, maybe there's a perennial shrub that would establish faster. I mean, it doesn't need to be that tall. And so I was wondering if you might suggest anything that would be planted in a row along the driveway that would trap that snow.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess, something that would be native and that would look fairly nice and maybe provide some bird or wildlife habitat. And I'm going to take my answer.
And you have several hundred feet of driveway.
Right.
So we're talking about a fair amount of money here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I mean, I probably want to get, some nursery stock or something.
Yeah, okay.
I had somebody ask me this a couple years ago, and I did some research on the internet, and I think it was Oregon State that had a really nice publication on windbreak plants. And what they suggested was a variety of things, both evergreen and non-evergreen. And I guess for shrubs, I would probably recommend Viburnum dentatum. That's the arrowwood viburnum. There are lots of different varieties. It's what we might call almost a four-season shrub, or at least a three-season shrub. It gets white flowers in the spring. It gets blueberries in the summer to fall, and then it gets wonderful fall color. And it's fairly fast-growing. Will take sun, that's where it gets its best fall color, to partial shade. And it's not... as far as we know yet, too susceptible to viburnum borer. There aren't a lot of other viburnum species that I can recommend anymore because of that little pest.
Yeah.
There are a number of...
Give the name of that one once more.
Sure, arrowwood viburnum.
Arrowwood viburnum, okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and there are a number of really nice cultivars that are available. Let's see. There are also dogwoods that you could use. Now,
yeah.
Do keep in mind that dogwoods will need a fair amount of maintenance as far as trimming, but they're fairly fast growing. A really nice one is the ivory halo dogwood. You might also want to think about something like there is a very nice salix, a willow called the flame willow. And that is also very nice for winter branches, if you are into collecting any of those. And speaking of other types of willows, there's the curly willow. That one will require some work as well. But these are all very, very twiggy things. Some of these are native. The viburnum dentatum, the arrowwood, is native. The dogwood is, although it's a cultivated variety, it's native. The evergreens that you could use something like the, I'm trying to remember the non-Latin name for it. it's the... Picea glauca. I don't want to encourage you to use something like white pine because it just gets too darn big. And blue spruce is not native here and gets a lot of diseases. But Picea glauca would be okay. Now, a non-native evergreen would be the Serbian spruce. That's a really nice, more compact evergreen that is very tolerant of a lot of different conditions.
All right. So good selections there. Thank you very much for calling. And Cindy in Plainfield, I believe you are next. Hi, Cindy.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
You were talking about the gypsy moth egg masses earlier and
right.
treating them with this oil. Can you just smoosh them?
Well, you can, but... I would wear gloves and keep in mind that some people are allergic to the hairs that are on the egg sacs.
Oh, okay.
Either breathing it or having skin contact with it. Some people it causes a dermatitis on, and some people have, you know, like if you have asthma, I wouldn't recommend squishing them.
And could you give the name of that product again?
Sure. It's Golden Pest Spray Oil.
Okay. Thank you very much.
All right. Mm-hmm. Thanks a lot for calling. Charles in Ingleside, you are next. Hi, Charles.
Good morning, Larry. Lisa, yeah. I've been trying to grow kiwis for several years, a number of years, and I can't get them through the second, to the second year or through the second year. I don't know if it's the wrong soil or what.
Hmm.
How do I do it?
Okay. What varieties are you using?
What soil?
What variety of kiwi?
I bought them from catalog stores, and I don't really remember.
Okay. There are some...
Any of them? I've used several kinds.
Yeah. It's been a while since I did any research on kiwis, but I'm trying to remember. There's one that the female is called Anna, and I don't remember what the male is called, but you do have to obviously have both of them. But I think that Anna and whatever the associated male are supposed to be hardier for this area. You do have to have a lot of sun. I'm sorry, where did you say you were located?
Just south of the Wisconsin border in Illinois.
Oh, okay. Well, then hardiness shouldn't be a real
issue. Shouldn't be an issue. I know Jung sells one Arctic Beauty.
Okay,
but
that's more of an ornamental. Are you trying to get the fruit, or are you trying
to get the fruit, yes.
Yeah, okay. That's a kind of a different critter.
Yeah.
That Arctic Beauty, though, is a beauty, and it takes about 3 years for it to really take off. But boy, those pink and silver leaves are pretty impressive, and it's mostly the male that has that coloration. I hate to not be able to give you a really good recommendation, but my memory is not real good on what the exact cultivars were.
What I pursued on the internet?
I would try looking up Anna.
Anna. Mm-hmm.
And like I say, I can't remember what the male is, but those are supposed to be fairly easy to grow. Have you done a soil test?
I don't know exactly what it is. No.
Okay. You might want to send a soil sample to the soil lab. And let's see here. I don't have the number in front of me. Here we go. You can call the soil lab, which is in Verona, and that's 608-262-4364. They'll send you a little bag and a set of instructions that tells you how to take a soil sample. Obviously, you have to wait until spring to do this, but it's a really good thing to have because it tells you what the pH of your soil is, which is the alkalinity or acidity of your soil, so that you can find out if that's in the optimal range for the plant that you're growing, your kiwi, and it'll tell you what you need to do for the fertility. And if you tell them that what you're trying to grow is kiwi, they can give you some recommendations for the soil that are more or less tailored for that plant.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, thank you very much.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Good luck. Appreciate your call. Lisa Johnson, Dane County UW Extension Horticulture Educator, our guest here on Garden Talk on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. If you have a question about your plants as we talk gardening with Lisa Johnson, give us a call at 1-800-642-1234 in Madison at 263-1890. Let's turn to Sharon in Milwaukee next. Hi, Sharon.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a question. My daughter lives in the Milwaukee area on a very shaded lot, some filtered sunlight, and she had nice privacy between her lot and the neighbor's lot, and then the neighbor went and chopped down everything. So now she has the view of a falling down old shed.
Oh.
Yes. And so we're looking to plant something that will grow quickly. It can be an evergreen or not, and just so that it gives her the privacy and covers up that shed. And like I said, it's filtered. She gets a little bit of sunlight, but it's a very natural area that mm-hmm. we're planting back there. She has deer and everything else.
Oh, okay. Well, that's going to make things a little challenging.
Yeah.
She may need to protect these new plantings for a while from the
sure.
deer predation.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, some things that I could recommend. Again, I would recommend that that Arrowwood Viburnum. It's probably not going to give you a whole lot of fall color in a real shaded area, but it is a plant that will grow in that kind of situation.
Okay, how tall does that get?
8 to 10 feet.
Okay, that'd be great.
Mm-hmm. You might also look at Pagoda Dogwood. That's a native.
Okay.
And does well in shady areas.
Mm-hmm. I have one of those. It's beautiful.
Aren't they beautiful?
Yeah.
I really
mm-hmm.
like them a lot.
I like the shape of it, yeah.
Yeah. You could put in some yew bushes, particularly Hicks yew.
Okay.
That's more of an upright.
Right.
Or Capitata yew. That's more of a Christmas tree shape. I'm not sure that that would fit in with the aesthetics of your area, but it is another more upright as opposed to spreading yew.
Mm-hmm. How do they grow relatively quickly?
No.
Yeah. Okay.
Unfortunately. So if you get a Hicks yew, you need to start with something that's fairly
big, ready.
Yeah.
Right. Fairly large. Mm-hmm. And with the evergreens, I do try and plant those in the spring, if at all possible.
Okay.
Let's see. What else? I'm thinking of woodland here. Okay. Well, no, Carrie is not going to work there because that's not enough light. Looking for things that are twiggy.
We may have, something may come.
Yeah.
As we keep listening,
okay.
Sharon.
I sure will. I appreciate the advice.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling. Maureen in Green Bay, it's your turn. Maureen, hi.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Let me preface by saying that I've had tulips in my yard for many years, hundreds of tulips, and they keep flowering. But last spring, many of them collapsed either at the top of the neck where the bloom attaches to the stem or halfway down the stem. If I put the halfway down stem in water, the bloom stayed nice and everything. Otherwise, they just shriveled up on the plant and keeled over.
Hmm.
Okay. Did you have a frost or a freeze?
I didn't think so. And
okay.
It wasn't all of the tulips, and it was interspersed throughout the yard.
Okay.
All different spots.
Have you looked at the bulbs? I'm kind of wondering if there isn't some sort of rot organism.
I didn't dig up any of the bulbs. I thought, well, I will wait and see what happens next year, because I called one of the plant companies, and they said that, do you dig up your bulbs every year? And I said, no. And he said, well, that's probably the problem. You're getting some sort of a disease because, and I plant new bulbs every year.
Yeah,
but
most of us don't dig up our bulbs every year.
No.
Actually, tulips don't usually survive long enough in our area unless they've got really good drainage during the summer and not a whole lot of water, unless, of course, they're species tulips, and those tend to last a little bit longer. So that's why I was wondering about a rot disease, because they often can get botrytis or other organisms.
Yeah. Okay, well, I guess all I can do is wait until this year and see what happens.
Yeah, and if you do experience that, first of all, dig up the bulb and see what it looks like, if it looks healthy or if it's kind of soft and mushy.
Okay.
If you're wanting to spend the money to do it, you might want to also send in some samples to campus, to Brian at the Plant Disease Diagnostic Lab, and that number was 608-262-2863.
Okay.
And they could do a culture and see what organism is in there. But
right.
I wouldn't recommend digging up your tulips every year.
Okay,
no.
Good. All right. And one other question. Can you plant sunflowers over and over in the same spot, or do they get some sort of a toxin in the soil?
Now that's one I haven't heard before. I don't see a problem with it.
No.
It's not in one of the, there are a couple of plant families like Solanaceae, which is the potato tomato family, and the cucurbits and the brassicaceae, which are the mustards and so on. Those you need to rotate around.
Okay.
But I haven't heard a problem with the composites.
Okay.
All right.
Okay, thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks for calling, Maureen. Dave in Fort Atkinson, your turn. Hi, Dave.
Hello, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
The elderberry bushes that I planted about 5 years ago, they come up every spring. There's new hope that they're going to survive, but by midsummer, the leaves are turning yellow, and by the end of the summer, they're dead. But they come up every spring. What am I doing wrong?
These are new plants, and they're all doing the same thing?
Yes.
Okay. Anything that you can think of in the soil that might...
Well, I'm within about 150 or 200 feet of some black walnut trees. Would they have an effect on elderberry bushes?
Now, I didn't think that black walnut affected elderberry. There certainly, it does sound like
that sort of
problem, though. If you're seeing wilting, yellowing, twisting of the foliage, that certainly could be what the problem is. I just don't remember whether that is on that list of plants that is affected by black walnut.
It sure sounds like it, though.
Yeah, it sure does. I've got a list here of plants that are susceptible, and we've got shrubs and trees, blackberries, cotoneaster, hydrangea, lilac, mountain laurel, potentilla, privet, rhododendron yew, apples and crab apples, and I think elderberry is within that family. That's probably what the problem is.
All right.
I would move it. Keep in mind that the root system of the black walnut, as with any tree, can be from 3 to 5 times the height of the tree. And if you have a really sensitive species, you might not have enough room in your yard. You might need to plant it in a raised bed or something.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Thanks for calling. And let's try Tom in Eau Claire next. Hi, Tom.
Yeah. Hi. Thanks. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I've got a question for you, too. I don't know if you can help me or not, but I've been in the construction business for 30-some years, and over the years, we've put tons of gypsum in landfills, and I'm just wondering if I could use that as a soil conditioner.
I have heard of it being used, but I thought that there was some problem with the calcium tying something up. I'm going to have to pass on this one because I'm just not sure. I know that, you know, they do sell it as a soil conditioner, like to help break up clay, but I am kind of dubious of the usefulness of that. It would be better to put in organic matter, frankly, rather than gypsum.
Gypsum, yeah. So, well, it just seems such a waste. Like,
yeah.
I said, I've put so much of it over the years, and it just gets landfilled.
If
it was a viable product that you could, you know, put into the soil and get some benefit out of it. So,
yeah, I know that it's used as a fertilizer and sometimes a soil conditioner, but I don't think I'd want to recommend using it in large quantities.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I wonder if there is some other use, though, for it. Maybe one of your listeners, Larry.
Maybe somebody else has some ideas on that. Stay listening, Tom.
Well, and, you know, it's just not me. It's everybody that used Gypsum's products. And on new construction, you know, we've got dumpsters and dumpsters of it that, and then it costs you money to get rid of it.
Mm-hmm.
And
sure.
If there was a benefit for it.
Well, good for you for thinking green.
No. Okay. Well, thank you for taking my call, then.
Yeah, thanks for calling. Well, that's one. Hopefully somebody else will have some ideas on that. So stay listening, Tom. Appreciate it. Bob in Oak Creek, it's your turn. Hi, Bob.
Hi. I've got a Japanese. Thanks for taking the call.
Sure.
I've got a Japanese variety of persimmon. My daughter brought some back from California a few years ago, And we found one of them with seeds in it. We saved the seeds and planted them, and I've got a plant that's about 2 feet tall.
Uh-huh.
It's very spindly, and I wondered a couple of things. If we kept it in a large enough pot, because we keep it indoors, I'm afraid to put it outside.
Yeah, I you could probably put it outside for summer, but I don't think it's going to make it over the winter.
Well, if we had a large enough top pot, we wondered if it would ever be able to grow to produce fruit. I don't know if they have to have a female variety available.
Oh, boy. I must admit, you are outside my geography here. Persimmons are not something that I know a whole lot about. I've lost a couple of kiwis and the persimmons here. I didn't think that they needed another
the
sex.
The opposite sex?
Yeah. But I could be wrong on that. That's one that I would have to say, please hold on a minute while I get some materials and I'll get back to you.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. Lisa Johnson, Dane County UW Extension Horticulture Educator, our guest here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Nice to have you with us for this edition of Garden Talk. I'm Larry Mueller with my guest, Lisa Johnson, Dane County UW Extension Horticulture Educator. Glad to have you listening in. Give us a call at 1-800-642-1234. In the Madison area, reach us at 263-1890, 263-1890. Jeff in Ketchum, Idaho is on board here. So let's go to Jeff. Hi, Jeff.
Hey, guys. Like I said, I'm from Ketchum, Idaho, and they've planted a ton of blue spruce in the area,
uh-huh.
And it seems like every year they have a very bad mite problem, so we're looking for a solution to treat the mites.
That sounds like spruce spider mite, which can be a problem, particularly in hot, dry climates with the blue spruce. Is it bad enough that they're dropping needles or?
There's mass discoloration on the internal needles of the trees.
Okay. There are some horticultural oils, and some miticides that you can use. Bifenthrin is one of the miticides. That's one of the permethrin-type chemicals.
Mm-hmm.
There may be some other recommended miticides that are commercial products that I don't know about, but that is one of them. What I'd probably recommend is that they don't use blue spruce in real hard areas like that, because blue spruce is used to growing in the mountains of Colorado. It's used to it being cool. It's used to it being moist but well drained. So if it's in a hot, dry area, it's just not going to be a happy plant. And there are so many diseases that we have problems with here in Wisconsin, Cytospora, for example. And we do have problems with the spruce spider mite here, too, when we have a real hot, dry summer. I'm not real familiar with the climate in Idaho, though. So what kinds of temperatures and so on do you have during the summer?
It is. It gets pretty hot, and it's very dry. There's next to no humidity.
Yeah.
And we have usually right around July 4th, first 2 weeks in July, it gets upper 90s to, triple digits. And then the remainder of the summer is usually, low 90s in that area.
Mites love that kind of condition, hot, dry. That's when we typically see it here in Wisconsin is during July and August. But it sounds like you probably get it even worse than we do. I'm wondering if they couldn't use another tree that's more native to your area instead of the blue spruce. I know that it's a beautiful tree, but if it's an unhappy tree, it's not going to be too beautiful.
Yeah. Good luck. Thank you for calling.
Okay, thanks so much.
Yeah, appreciate it very much. I want to mention that the caller earlier, the builder who called in with a question about gypsum board, Jim Packard was doing a little research, and maybe we got a call from somebody as well.
Thank you, Jim.
Professor Dick Wolkowski here at UW-Madison has been doing research on use and reuse of gypsum board, and he has a paper on that.
Cool.
So you could go to, for that caller, go to this website for the paper. It's the website is wastecap.wi. So it's the word waste followed by the cap, followed by WI, all one word. So wastecapwi.org. And then just go under construction and demolition. And it's utilization of crushed gypsum drywall waste for potato production in Wisconsin.
Aha. Uh-huh. So they have found something that
so there
can...
is something for that. So
great.
Waste. Yeah. So go to wastecapwi. wastecapwi.org. Mm-hmm. And the article paper by Dick Wolkowski. So that's great.
Yeah, that is really good news. I know we do a lot of potato production farther up north, like in the Rhinelander mm-hmm. area. And I'm wondering if maybe the soils are kind of sandy mm-hmm. up there and
sure.
that they might be lacking in calcium. So
yeah, might be something for our caller to look into.
Yeah,
Marilyn.
Great idea.
Yeah, great idea. Marilyn in Greendale, you're up. Marilyn, hello.
Hello. Yes, I found a very nice tree that had beautiful acorns and beautiful leaves, and wondered if I could plant one of the acorns in Greendale, and how deep, and is that a doable thing?
Sure. Yeah, you can plant acorns. Now, I should warn you that a lot of them tend to be under predation by their various little worms and grubs and so on that do invade them. So I'd get a number of acorns if you could.
Okay.
And one way that you can test to see if they have been eaten from the inside already is that you get a bucket of water, you float the acorns in there, or you put the acorns in there, and if they float, you've probably got a little friend inside there that you don't want. And if they sink, they're probably okay. With the acorns, you know, a lot of them get planted by squirrels, so mm-hmm. we don't have to dig too deep.
Okay.
You just, you know, a couple, 3 inches. And of course, with the squirrels, you do have to worry about them trying to
sure.
dig up your acorns as well. But where did you get this? I'm sorry, I missed where you said you got it from again?
In Saugatuck, Michigan.
Oh, okay. All right. So
should
at least
right.
we're, yeah, I was thinking if it was a live oak from Texas, probably not. But, yeah.
But how can I prevent the squirrels from taking my acorn
okay,
tree?
Okay. What you can do is you can put chicken wire
uh-huh.
Over where you're germinating the acorns until
okay.
you start to get a good size sprout going.
Okay.
And then you can put hardware cloth around that sprout so that it's protected
uh-huh.
from bunnies and
right,
other things.
Right, so would I be seeing if I were able to find a place to bury it 3 inches or wherever, would I see some growth next year?
It's possible, but they can take a while to germinate.
Okay.
Dr. Michael Durr has this wonderful book that's all about propagation of woody plants
mm-hmm.
and, you know, what temperatures and what kinds of things you need to do to take cuttings off of woody plants. And I'd kind of recommend that you might want to take a look at that.
Okay.
And that'll give you more specific instructions. And if you knew what kind of oak tree it was, that would be even better.
Red.
Red. Okay.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Good luck.
Thank you.
Yep. Thanks a lot for calling. Here's another thing on the gypsum board. There's a corporation that goes around to job sites and retrieves gypsum board for reuse in flooring. And that corporation is Mannington Corporation. So Mannington Corporation will go around job sites, I assume, in different areas and retrieve gypsum board, and they reuse it in flooring.
Oh, I hope he's still listening.
I hope so, too. Some great ideas here. And maybe some other builders are listening, too. Oh, let's hope so. Wayne in Ivanville, Minnesota is up next, so let's go there. Hi, Wayne.
Good day, and thank you for taking my call. We try to grow tomatoes organically and have trouble with leaf spot. Before the end of the season, tomatoes yellow up and die, and it's a zone 4 area. Any help for me?
Boy, I remember Brian Huddleston talking. He's our plant disease diagnostician for the state, and he said that the genes on the tomato for flavor and for disease resistance are very close together. So either you can get a real disease-resistant plant where the tomatoes taste like cardboard, or you can get a really great-tasting tomato that unfortunately is disease-prone. there are some organic things you can do. The first thing is that you can cover your soil with something like straw or newspapers or some other type of organic covering so that you don't get soil splashing up on your tomato plant, because a lot of these pathogens are soil born. The other thing you might want to consider doing is growing tomatoes in pots and using different soil every year. Certainly, if you're growing them in the ground, you do need to move them around to different areas, because the soil does become populated by various pathogens that tend to like tomato roots and other solanaceous crop roots. When you're choosing your tomato seed, anything that you can find that's resistant to various pathogens, and probably what you're looking at is, I would guess, Septoria leaf spot or maybe late blight, something like that. And, you know, these are, they're rain-borne. They can be float through the air, so there's not a whole lot other than trying to exclude the soil-borne stuff that gets splashed up from the soil that you can do on an organic basis that I'm aware of.
Would the red plastic mulch work in that case, then? That would be organic, I would assume.
Sure, yeah, that's good stuff. You can, I was reading that you can increase your crop yield by something like 20% with that red plastic mulch. Tomatoes and strawberries both.
Oh, interesting. Well, mm-hmm. Thank you very much.
Yeah, and the plastic mulch thing is really interesting, because they've done research, I think at Purdue, where different colors of plastic mulch will increase the yield of different kinds of plants. So like peppers have one color and cucumbers have another, and you can get all these products. Yeah, it is cool.
Thanks again for calling. Appreciate it. And yet another story on the gypsum. Door County has a machine that they take around to job sites. This is the county itself. It's a portable machine, goes to job sites. It grinds the boards up, and then they spread on fields of heavy, where you've got heavy clay.
Okay, so they are using it mass scale for clay busting, then.
Yeah. Hmm. Yeah. So there's another another way to do it. Portable machine. The county has it and goes around. And
that's really good to know. I mean, I knew you could use it on a small scale, but I didn't know if I could recommend using it for
for a big scale.
Yeah.
Sure. Well, Jeff in Madison has a question for you, so let's go to Jeff. Hi, Jeff.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. Yeah, I'm calling. I have Phyllostachys bassetti, which is bamboo, good for 20 degrees below zero.
Mm-hmm.
And it does just fine if the weather stays constant in the winter. But once it gets wacky winter weather like we're having now.
The freeze-thaw?
Yeah, then the leaves start to dry up, and then the shoots are going to be dead, and you have to wait for the new ones to come up in the spring. And I was wondering if there's any way to get the green to happen all four seasons like it's purported to have, or if we're in the wrong zone to have the four seasons. But I was assuming if it can go to negative 20 Fahrenheit that we could have the four-season green.
I know. What you're looking at there is probably root hardiness. I have a Phyllostachys in my yard, too, and it does brown out towards the, you know, when we first have a freeze. You know, it's just it's not a plant that's native here, and We're unfortunately not in the right zone for that to happen. But we can grow them with nice foliage during the summer, and I just appreciate it then.
Oh, well, this one will be fine. Like, the first season, it was green, and it was 3 years ago, and that's when we had the very cold weather at the beginning of December, and then we had the thaw. And once we had the thaw, then that's when it messed up the plant.
Yeah, it started probably trying to photosynthesize, or at least to respire and give off water, and it couldn't pull any up from the soil because the soil's frozen. So it loses moisture but can't replenish it.
Oh, okay. Great. Thanks.
Thanks a lot for calling. And just to go back to that Door County mentioning the portable machine there, it wasn't the county itself that it has it. It's a commercial operation.
Oh.
It's a commercial site that has a portable machine they take around to job sites, and they grind up the boards, and then they spread them on the fields.
Well, that is great.
Let's go to Danielle in Plymouth, Wisconsin. Hi, Danielle.
Yeah, good morning. I'm calling in regards to your tomatoes with that blight.
Sure.
That you lady just talked about.
Mm-hmm.
I had heard not just too long ago that if you use a tablespoon of baking soda per gallon of water, that should take care of the problem.
You can use, there is a formula for powdery mildew that you can use on roses. It's a gallon of water, 3 tablespoons of oil, and I think a tablespoon of... oh, boy, I'm going to get my recipe wrong here. I know Brian has it on his website somewhere, but it consists of a gallon of water, some oil, and some baking soda. Now, it might work on tomatoes. They've done some interesting research. For roses, it keeps off mildew and black spot. And what it does is the baking soda kind of changes the geography or topography of the leaf so that the fungus is sort of confused and can't quite get a foothold.
Oh.
I had not heard of that being tried on tomatoes, but it might work.
Wouldn't hurt to try.
Yeah, wouldn't hurt to try. I don't think that it would be. There are some plants that kind of thing is phytotoxic on, and then the leaves turn yellow and fall off. So you want to be careful to research that thoroughly before you try it.
Yeah.
And with the lady with the tulips that called real early in our program about them dying off or whatever.
Yeah.
If she waters them, tell them not to water them because that's what kills mine.
Right. And that's like I was talking to her about that tulips in our area typically will die because they're in, first of all, they're in clay, which retains moisture. They're from an area, they come from Iran, Iraq, Turkey, all kinds of other places that have very hot, dry summers. And so what do? We plant them in our annual beds. And what do our annuals need? Lots of water. So they're kind of, you know, up against it with having clay soil in the first place, and then we go and water them a lot in the second place. So I try and plant any tulips that I want to hang around for a long time underneath the overhang on the south side of the house, and I don't put a whole lot of other things around them. And then I get really good tulips for cutting for a long period of time. Also, if you use the species tulips, which are the kind of dwarf tulips, the Grigie eyes and all the other, the Turkestans and so on, those typically will handle our clay soils better. So good recommendation.
Thanks, Dan, for calling. Appreciate it. Michael and Maribel, you are next. Hi, Michael.
Thank you. Michael Slattery and Maribel. I'm calling to respond. A person called in about planting persimmon seeds that he'd gotten from California.
Oh, yeah. Good.
You need to have another persimmon tree in order to propagate.
You do. Okay. We were trying to find that on the web.
And then second, I lived in Japan a long time, and persimmons do not do well at all in cold weather. And as a matter of fact, I've planted American persimmons here. And this is just borderline 4 and 5.
Mm-hmm.
And if you are anywhere less than 5 on the cold hardiness scale, they won't survive. I've had to replace mine here. And
sure.
The last point is the person, if you have persimmons, we don't eat them this way in this country, but they do in Japan. If you get a big, juicy persimmon and let it halfway rot, and you eat it like a custard with a spoon, it's absolutely spectacular. It's just delicious. And those are all my comments. Thank you.
Right. Thanks a lot for calling.
Thank you.
Appreciate that very much. Persimmons. Oh, letting them rot. I suppose they get sugary.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I have a friend who makes a kind of a pudding with them that's really quite tasty.
Amy in Exonia. Your turn. Hi, Amy.
Hi. I planted a garden this year, and I had a lot of root vegetables, and they got attacked by bugs or worms or whatever, I guess. And I found in my garden a lot of these long, probably like 2 or 3 inch things. I assume that they're grubs. I'm not sure. They were white, but then they had like a brown helmet head thing to them.
Mm-hmm. And they curl up like a C?
They didn't do it like a pill bug. They didn't curl up like a pill bug. I mean, they were wriggly, and I didn't take long to take a real good long look at them because they were kind of grossing me out. But what I'm wondering is how I can get rid of them and how I can have a better garden so I don't have all my root plants getting eaten up. And I'll take my answer off the...
Okay.
Okay, well, first of all, we need to make sure what kind of insect we're talking about, whether they are grubs or whether they're cutworms. They may be cutworms, but cutworms usually attack at the ground level rather than underground. If we're talking about something like Japanese beetle grubs or May-June beetle grubs, then there's a different sort of treatment for that. Could be armyworms. I'm just really not sure what insect we're talking about here. What you may want to do if, let me start over here. If you have an infestation of Japanese beetle grubs, probably you'll notice it in your yard because your grass will have a lot of dead spots in it, and if you peel it up, you'll find that you have Japanese beetles. If you have that kind of infestation, and usually they aren't going to attack vegetable crops, then you would want to use something like imidacloprid, but I'm not sure that that's labeled for vegetables. So what you may want to do is use raised beds to try growing these crops in. I would also recommend when you find the insect again to send a sample to Phil Pelletieri.
Send a picture.
Yeah, or send a picture. You don't even have to send the critter anymore. Just email him a picture. And let's see, where is Phil? Phil is at... he's got a name that's a little difficult to spell. It's P-E-L-L-I-T-T-E, that's P-E-L-L-I-T-T-E, at entomology.wisc.edu. So pellet at entomology.wisc.edu. And Phil can diagnose these things. You want to get a really nice, clear shot of the head and the prolegs and the back end and so on.
And thank you very much for calling. And Lisa, thank you so much. Appreciate it very much. We'll look forward to your next visit.
Okie dokie.
Thank you much. Habitat for Humanity Restore on Cottage Grove Road in Madison is a good resource for information on reusing gypsum board. So Habitat for Humanity Restore in Madison. That's another source. Thank you for listening, and please stay with us. Lots more in store here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.